question about this idea. You mentioned how to deal with when other elders are being chosen.
Yes.
So I'm on a little road and I'll get to my question.
Okay.
You know, first of all, as you said, really the scriptures don't speak very much about the process of choosing an elder. If anything, 1 Timothy 5 and Titus chapter 1, it seems to be like evangelist driven. So whatever is going on, the evangelist is kind of helping this process, or even at times, don't lay hands on somebody too quickly.
Right.
Is the evangelist choosing the elder? I mean, so we live in a very democratic culture, which means that part of that is the whole church needs to feel like we voted for this preacher, for the elder to be an elder. While the culture in the first century was very different, you know, people was like, okay, I guess he's going to be the elder. So I guess my question that I have for you is, it in the years that you've seen different process being done, what have you felt, or in your judgment, that has worked, what hasn't worked, even things like, you know, that you felt like there should have been men who were appointed, and because the congregation, I don't know, felt like they didn't have much of a voice. Anyway, please, I would like to hear your wisdom.
Okay. Let me just tell you the process that we've used, which is varied some. Usually, if we're going to start this process, in all these cases, we were adding to the number of elders that were there. We would usually ask the preacher to preach a little bit on it. Then we would ask the elders, ask the members rather, to suggest names of people that they think are qualified. And we had also, the last few times, had said, you talk with the person whose name you want to submit to make sure they're willing to serve and that they are in agreement. And then we would take those names and go through them. And this is not very democratic, what I'm about to say. And the elders would sometimes, the last time we appointed elders, this was happening. One of the names that was submitted, we felt, had some voice and sat down and talked with him about it and told him that his name had been submitted and that we thought he was not ready for that role. And he pretty well accepted that. His wife and his daughter were not as accepting as he was with it. And then we, when we've gone through that process and we submitted the names to the congregation and we tell the congregation they have 2 weeks or whatever to react to it, and we said to them, to the congregation, if you have questions about whether this person has the characteristics, don't talk to your neighbor, go talk to that person. For the most part, that worked out. And we said, don't come talk to us, you go talk to the person. And generally that worked out. And then if whatever that process produced, then we appointed that person. Now, I don't know whether that answers your question.
Follow up on that.
Okay.
So the person goes and talks to this man that other people think he's very well qualified. But this person says, hey, and we don't know the maturity level of that individual. Hey, listen, I don't think you should be an elder because of this and this reason. And the man, who's a humble man, says, man, you know what? I shouldn't. I just believe that that destroys the process based on immaturity. While rather than older, more mature individuals being like, okay, yes, it's true you may have some concerns, but those concerns are based on you're not being as mature, but most of the people here believe that this is a very qualified man. I just believe that our democracy there doesn't help us when we're trying to get a full agreement on that. I don't know, you have something to...
Well, in my experience, Ben, we didn't have much of that over 45 years. it, you know, there's, and as the other men can tell you, there are other processes that people have used. We found that one to be fairly effective. Now, it's interesting, one of the men who's now an elder, when his name came up, we said, we don't think he's ready. And two of us who were closer to him went and talked to him and said, you know, you're on the path, but we don't think you're ready. And he accepted that, and then sometime later, he was appointed. Yes, sir.
In light of the challenges that you listed here, and also yesterday you said that those who are going to be selected as elders should already have experience doing elder things, mm-hmm. How would you recommend getting that experience?
I just recommend living a Christian life, helping other people, whether it's physical or spiritual, or just doing the things that, as I said, Christians need to be doing most of the things elders do. Please do those. That's kind of a short answer.
Wait just a minute. Just as a slight follow-up, yeah. I think there's about a third of us here who are not preachers mm-hmm. full time. Mm-hmm. And there tends to be, when there are not elders, a default that people will go to the preacher.
Exactly.
And that's, in many cases, good, because those are good men, but also, right, so like, I don't like throw myself into certain situations, hey, you know, you have to talk to me, or anything.
Right,
like
that. Yeah.
Is there a way to...
Well, as I said yesterday, and this is what I meant this morning by bubbling up, one of the practical things is, think about people you would go to if you had a major issue in your life. I'm talking about people in the congregation. Those are kind of the people you would think would bubble up to be elders. Brother Patty?
I just wanted to comment on that about the elders. If you list all of the qualities of eldership, you've got about 29 or 30 of them, depending on how you list them. And only 6 of them do not apply to Christians.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like the husband of one wife.
Yeah.
It's not all Christian. But every other one applies to every Christian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where, that's your breeding ground.
Yeah.
And that's why we should be training our children in those qualities, so that when they get to that age, they've been practicing those qualities for years.
Yeah.
And they qualify then for that position.
Very good.
So
Bill has to wait.
So I'm not a preacher at
all.
But based on listening to the last time you made, which was our society is deteriorating, right? Our families are being attacked. As a young man, I have it's almost like a sense of responsibility to, if I have, for him who knows to do the right thing and doesn't do it, to him it is sin.
Right.
So for someone like me, to look forward to that very long journey ahead where eventually I may become an elder, how can I start, even though I'm not even a preacher yet? So how can I start, get my foot somewhere where I can start on that journey?
You just do things a Christian should do. Mm-hmm. Now that sounds simple. Bill?
I'm not looking to pivot too much from where the conversation's been, but as far as like when to select new elders, I think, you know, different schools of thought, you know, but there's a, you know, well, things aren't going super well right now. We're trying to deal with some things. Maybe now is not the time to select elders, or everything is great, so maybe now is not the time to select elders. You know, or you wait every 2 years, every 5 years, like what do you think? Because, I mean, really, I guess the light I came in is like, then you never select new elders. You know, so kind of what's the thought process there?
Well, I don't know how to answer that, other than the last thing you said does remind me of one thing that I think you need to be careful as elders, that you don't leave the impression with the congregation that we're the elders and we don't want any more. I think that's the is the key point there. And I'm sure there's, if I look around for some of the quote older people, there'd be a lot of answers to that question. But I think you look at being in the congregation and think, well, you know, this man is at a point where he should have that opportunity.
So Roger asked a follow-up question, so I'm going to do the same thing. So when looking at the needs of the congregation, yeah, and maybe you think, well, there's not trying to be, not only think churches need to be pragmatic as yeah, far as who we're going to select or not right, select, but sometimes you kind of look at the needs, and there might be a man or two who you think, they have, like, you know, there's the qualities that everybody needs to have, but there's some guys who have very specific qualities that be tailored to some of our needs. Do you say, all right, well, we're going to try to move in this direction because of these, like, kind of the people we have in-house who may be able to help, or do you kind of just keep it in the democratic, open it up, let everybody choose, whatever the case may be there?
Well, on the last one, I've never thought about this as a democratic process. I don't think in the traditional sense that's it. Those are judgmental kinds of things that the elders should know the congregation. I'm talking about this, quote, sitting elders, should know the congregation as well or better than anyone, and should have some sense about timing and that sort of thing. So it's just a judgment thing.
There's been some hands over here. So.
I'm sorry, what?
Hands have been over here. Okay. So,
yeah, first of all, really appreciate the lecture and really appreciate the answer on this question of selection. And I just wanted to use a scripture that I can find helpful. It's not about elders, but there's a principle in Acts 6. Selection and appointment were two different things.
Yeah.
The 12 apostles certainly would have been able to know, hey, here's seven guys we think would be great. But they entrusted the congregation and said, you look about and you select, yeah, bring them to us, we will appoint. And that's especially, I appreciate how you said when they selected somebody inappropriate. Like if the congregation said, if Ananias and Sapphira were still alive, hey, Ananias! I believe Peter and the apostles would say, we have a talk with Ananias. So selection does not make things, but the apostles did that. They asked the congregation to select, and they appointed.
I have an example almost as ridiculous as what you just said. We were going through this process, and an older woman whose husband had died, and we asked people to submit names, and she submitted the name of a really fine fellow. Only problem was he wasn't married. So I called her and I said, Miller, what in the world? Why don't you do that? She said, I know he's not qualified, but he's just such a good person. I just want to get his name in. Now, if you knew Miller, I mean, it wasn't the issue. Miller is big Miller. Steve.
Yeah, I was just drafting.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I guess I'm kind of thinking about this in a few different directions. So the last point that you made with the challenges is, as an elder, how to carry the responsibility of the eldership while not overemphasizing authority, which I think is that's great. My mind went to Hebrews 13, where it seems to me that the discussion when talking about leaders is the shepherds or elders, specifically later in the chapter, those who are watching over your soul. But earlier it says, you know, to watch them and see the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith.
Right.
The men that are serving as elders are men. They're fallible. They make mistakes. But are generally maybe wiser, more experienced, probably have better judgment in those areas of not sin or right and wrong, but just areas of judgment. So in situations like that, what the elder's judgment is would probably be better than your average member's judgment. I don't know if that makes sense. So how do you deal with that situation while not emphasizing the authority or that my way is right, right, both as an elder, but then also from my perspective as a preacher working with an eldership, right, how to help maybe counsel them through that while not, don't be domineering, but your judgment probably is better.
Yeah, I don't know that I totally agree with, you know, there are some people in the congregation whose judgment on a given thing may be better than the elders.
True.
And I don't want to step on any toes on this, But, and I don't know all across the country, all across the world as far as that's concerned, some of the things that happened with congregations during the COVID, and, you know, the reaction that some people had to what the elders decided they were going to do, you know, those were judgmental things that the elders may not have any better judgment on that than anybody else. So that's where, in my opinion, elders need to not be dominating, as you use the term, which is good, but try to, and I think if elders are very perceptive about that, they're going to try to talk with some of the people in the congregation whose judgment they respect and try to get some ideas. I would say, regarding the COVID protocols, as we talk about it this time, I think our elders handled it about as well as it could be handled. But not everybody was happy about it. And, you know, you've got the mask issue and the survey of the Lord's Supper and all those sorts of things.
You mentioned two things. You said if a man doesn't desire the work of an elder, he shouldn't be one. But you also said at the same time, if a man has the qualities of an elder and the congregation desires him to be an elder, how could he not be one?
Yeah.
So how would you reconcile those two ideas?
You're using my words against me. Well, you know what? I think it's highly up to the individual. And he has to live with the decision he makes. I would, as one person in the congregation, if I went to somebody and said, could I submit your name? And they said, no, I don't want to do that. I mean, I'm not going to submit his name. I think it's left up to him. Oh, you're okay.
So we were talking about selecting, appointing, and then Scott helped. The thought that I was having. So you have a situation where men are put forward, and as you described, you go speak to those men. You know, we don't talk to others about it, we speak to the men. And the concerns that are brought up sometimes aren't scriptural concerns.
They're subjective.
They're subjective. And, you know, and you're in my question is the role of the preacher in this, because he has told Timothy and Titus to appoint. So we are in that scenario, and it's not scriptural. I mean, how is the ones that are being put forward saying, well, do we just ignore this concern that because it's subjective, it's not a scriptural objection to them being elders? Mm-hmm. Is that when the role of the preacher comes in and observes it and says, well, this isn't a scriptural reason for them not? Or do we just say, you know, it's obvious that people aren't willing to follow them, regardless if it's scriptural or not, so therefore we don't have that? Because that's the problem it seems to be in the Northeast right now. There's a lot of congregations that don't have elders. And it seems, from my perspective, and I could be wrong, that's a lot of that. There's a lot of corporate thinking going on as far as how we're going to do things.
Yeah.
And we're not following the biblical pattern when it comes to appointing elders, so therefore we just continue on without them.
When you say not following the biblical pattern, what do you mean?
Well, as far as you're having people just come up with not scriptural reasons to not appoint somebody.
Yes.
Like, well, and you know, I know an example where a preacher was one of the people put forward.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to give yourself a raise.
And well, then someone says that.
Yeah, and then how do you reconcile with that? Because it's obviously this person just, like, it's a fear, it's pride.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you,
well,
I don't think there's an easy answer.
Well, there's not. But, you know, life's not filled with easy answers, but,
right.
You know, I think ideally the parties involved would sit down and try to talk through that. But Christians in a congregation are all levels of maturity. So sometimes those questions are raised by people who are not too mature spiritually, and you have to take that into consideration how you're kind of dealing with it.
Of course, but they observe themselves as spiritually mature. That's where the difficulties arise.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
We'll let that be the last question.
This one?
Yes.
Good. Oh, no. I'll oh, you were going to do another one. Are you saying one more question?
Do one more.
Okay.
My question is, your point number four was about finding time and balancing the time to feed the flock and take care of yourself. To what extent or how do you, I guess, utilize your fellow elders in on both of those counts? Handing off situations or, you know, even seeing them, these are my shepherds as well. And how do you work together with the eldership to handle that?
Well, some with that. Again, our congregation is large. And if I go back to, you know, I said we divide up into groups, but not for this. And somebody said, well, I'm in Herman's group. We don't have a Herman. But still, you're a shepherd for the whole group. So you've got to do that. But I think as a practical matter, at least in our case, you know, we've sometimes said, look, you have a better relationship with this person than I do. Why don't you deal with that? So if the elders have the right kind of approach and outlook, I think they kind of work together on that. And guys, when you know, when you're dealing with some kind of serious sin, there is so much emotion in that with people that it's difficult to deal with. But if you sign on to be an elder, you need to know it's hard work. It's got great rewards. We're finished, according to the timekeeper. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, just really quick before we take a break.